MSW Media. Please join me in thanking our new sponsor, Home Chef. For a limited time, Home Chef is offering you 18 free meals, plus free shipping on your first box and free dessert for life at homechef.com/dailybeans. Hello and welcome to the Daily Beans for Wednesday, April 17th, 2024. Today, we have seven jurors seated and sworn in the Trump 2016 election interference criminal trial. The Michigan Attorney General, Dana Nessel, is set to bring charges against the ex-House Speaker Republican Lee Chatfield. One America News Network and Smartmatic have reached a settlement agreement for defamation. A federal appeals court has overturned West Virginia's transgender sports ban. The U.S. Supreme Court heard oral arguments over Title 18, U.S. Code, Section 1512C2. Rob Snyder bombed so hard he walked a Republican event. A Cybertruck owner says his accelerator got stuck while he was driving. The Supreme Court allows Idaho to enforce its ban on gender-affirming care for transgender youth. And Mr. Hankey, the king of the subprime car loan, has filed paperwork in support of his guarantee of Trump's bond in the New York Attorney General civil fraud case. I'm Allison Gill.
And I'm Dana Goldberg.
Hey, Dana. Happy Wednesday.
Happy Wednesday to you, my friend. How are you?
I am now in the possession of a bunch of knowledge of excess line insurance in New York.
What?
That I didn't ever think that I would need. Yeah, I'm going to do something I haven't done in a while. In the B block today, I'm going to go over a court filing and rant about it, because this one is the one that Don Hankey, remember the guy, the subprime car loan guy?
Oh, right. That was going to give Donald Trump's bond up.
Yeah, he's going to back Donald Trump's $175 million bond. And New York Attorney General is like, this looks fucking janky. And the court was like, this looks sketch AF. And so they rejected the bond, and now they have to file paperwork because they're having this hearing on April 22nd.
Okay.
Well, I read the filing, and it's like as solid as Swiss cheese, dude. And I went and looked on a website where they said they were registered to be an insurer for excess lines in New York, and they're not even on there. They aren't even on the old lists.
Oh,
like,
wow.
They appear nowhere. And I'm like, did I just stumble upon some breaking fucking news, or am I missing something because I don't know enough about what insurance companies do? So I'm going to go over that filing and the research that I found in the B block. Of course, we're going to discuss it on next week's cleanup too, but I really wanted to spend some time covering it in depth because I think I might have stumbled upon something kind of important, because if they aren't a certified excess lines insurance company in the state of New York, then they lied in their filing and that would be bad. So also Chicago, St. Louis, Milwaukee, Nashville, San Francisco, Philly, New York, Boston, DC, Portland, Seattle. Tickets are selling out fast for the Live Beans show. So you want to grab yours now at AllisonGill.com. And hey, patrons, first of all, thanks for being patrons. I'm going to see a lot of you this Saturday in DC, but check your inbox because I'm going to be volunteering at a food pantry on Saturday while I'm in DC for the MSW Media Meetup. And I want you to come volunteer with me.
I love that.
One of our listeners, one of our patrons, put this whole thing together.
That's amazing.
Truly, truly incredible. And I'm so proud of that. And I want to go help in any way I can. So check your inbox and the Patreon page for that information, or your Supercast inbox email. Dana, we have seven jurors that have been seated and sworn in already. Seven.
I have a question.
Yeah.
So I know that they did this whole thing. There was 100 jurors, let's say, and they asked this questionnaire, and if you have any bias and do you think you can be impartial? And 50 people said, no, I cannot be impartial.
Mm-hmm.
So my fear, I'm sure you've thought about this, everyone listening has thought about this, I feel like most, and I could be wrong, but it's the liberal people that are like, I can't be impartial. You shouldn't have me on this jury. And I feel like maybe there's Trump supporters that are like, I can totally be impartial, that are trying to get on the jury. Is there any sort of background check on these people, like their Facebook feeds or their search mm-hmm. history once their names are submitted?
Yeah, here's what they're doing, right? They hand out the list of names. And as each person verbally answers the 42 question questionnaire.
Okay.
The lawyers are looking at their social media sites.
Okay. That makes me very happy.
Mm-hmm. And then they can, each side gets to ask questions. Then they think about it for like 10 minutes. Then they come back and maybe ask the judge to challenge some of the jurors and dismiss them based on some social media posts that happened today. Somebody actually posted about Trump, good, his Muslim ban failed in court, get him out, lock him up.
Oh, that's definitely bias, yeah.
Yeah, and so while I'd love to have that person on the jury.
Agreed.
Right, but the judge was like, you know what, if you just talked about the Muslim ban, I'd be cool, but you said lock him up, so I got to dismiss you.
Yeah.
And when the judge dismisses, it doesn't count against, you know, each side gets 10 dismisses, okay. I guess. It doesn't count against those, right?
So okay.
The judge will go through, dismiss who he wants to dismiss based on obvious, what he thinks obvious bias. And then if they're not satisfied, the lawyers can use their 10 turns, you know, their 10, I guess, dismisses,
sure.
10 strikes to strike jurors. And I think the DA has six challenges left, and the Trump side has 4 challenges left. So, but they seated 7 people. They need 18, right? 12 jurors and 6 alternates.
Uh-huh. Yep.
And when the judge swore these 7 people in, he said, be back here Monday at 9:30. I think we might be able to start opening statements on Monday.
Amazing.
He thinks that, you know, court's out today. It's not that they don't meet on Wednesdays, because he is actually the judge in the state mental health court. So he has other cases that he needs to hear. And so he thinks that Thursday and Friday, they'll be able to seat the rest of the jury and that they can get started on Monday. That's so fast, Dana. That's so fast.
And thank you for the explanation. I'm sure there's a lot of other people that are like, this, Adam, what do we do if someone gets on there intentionally? Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, they could have gone and scrubbed their stuff and deleted it or tried to make it look better, you know.
Sure.
There's really no way. And if any trial has the potential of getting a mole juror seated,
it would be this one.
It's this one. And it would be in favor of Donald Trump. Because like you said, left-leaning, liberal-minded progressives aren't going to sit there. A lot of them were like, you know what? I slept on it. I thought about it. I can't be fair and impartial. He's a fucking rapist. You know, like,
yeah.
And they do the right thing. So it's not them I'm worried about. All right. We have so much news to get to today. But first, we have some quick hits.
And to make a long story short, too
late. All right. First in this section, voting technology company Smartmatic and the far-right network One America News said Tuesday that they had settled a defamation lawsuit stemming from the outlet's lies about the 2020 election. Quote, the case has been resolved pursuant to a confidential agreement. This is from OAN attorney Chip Babcock. That's what he told CNN.
It's a great name. It's a great name.
Great name, I know, right? Smartmatic has resolved its litigation against OANN through a confidential settlement. Smartmatic's lead attorney, Eric Connolly, confirmed in a statement. Both parties declined to share details about that settlement.
Although
sure they will be leaked soon.
Either that, or we will hear someone on OANN say, hello, my name is Chip Babcock III, and I am here to say there were no election irregularities with the Smartmatic machine. Like, he'll have to read some sort of a public statement. You know, we'll be keeping our eyes out for that, for their part of the settlement agreement. That's if one exists outside of just money. Also, U.S. Supreme Court today expressed concern with prosecutors, the DOJ, using 1512C2, obstructing an official proceeding, to charge hundreds of January 6 Capitol riot defendants, with the justices leaning toward a position that could jeopardize those prosecutions. And it says here, and the criminal case against Donald Trump. And I disagree with that, because Jack Smith has put in multiple filings how he knows that this could be narrowed, the interpretation of 1512C2, and even if it is, it would not impact at all the 2 charges for 1512 against the former president. Because the argument basically, Dana, was the rioter, the insurrectionist, says, hey, it has to do with a document. If I didn't touch or alter or do anything to a document or evidence, then it doesn't count. Because it's a 2-part law that says if you impede a document or alter a document or otherwise obstruct an official proceeding, and they think, well, otherwise means and, not otherwise. Like, they're trying to redefine otherwise. And this is a catch-all backstop thing. And but even if I think my takeaway is they may narrow the understanding of it, but that it would not free the January 6th folks. I think that it won't preclude them from having been charged with this, nor will it touch the Donald Trump stuff. So we'll see what the Supreme Court does.
All right. Thank you, AG. This one's from the Daily Beast. It turns out even Republicans can no longer stomach Rob Schneider's comedy. Yeah, I know. Can you imagine? According to a new report by Politico, in the Saturday Night Live alum, he performed a stand-up set at a Republican networking event last year that proved to be, quote, so gross and vulgar that it prompted the host to cut him off early because he was interrupted 10 minutes into what was supposed to have been a 30-minute set. Snyder made at least one joke about, quote, Korean whorehouses. This is from Politico. This is what sources from Politico said. His material caused at least one lawmaker, and get this, it was Senator Cindy Hyde-Smith, who I do believe voted against an anti-lynching law. So if she was upset by this,
yeah.
So she's the one that walked out. She got up and walked out with a spokesperson confirming, and I quote, she didn't have to listen to it. And so she got up and left. The roughly 150 people present, including more than 40 Senate chiefs of staff, were emailed an apology by the event's organizers the next day. Representatives for Snyder did not immediately respond to Politico's request for comment.
Womp, womp, bomb.
Yeah. I hate that they keep calling him an SNL alum because I feel like that's where people like are now attaching him to, even though he's a racist fuck, instead of like 100 bad movies that he did, you know, but I guess that's what's recognizable.
Yeah. We all know him as making copies. That's just how we know him, right? That was his one kind of funny thing.
Right.
And so that's how we all remember that fella. If you are of a certain age, I will say.
Indeed.
All right. We have a lot more news to get to. Let's hit the hot notes. Hot notes. All right. From Paul Egan et al. At the Detroit Free Press. And do me a favor. Google a photo of Lee Chatfield so you can see this guy's fucking face when I read this story, okay? Former Michigan House Speaker Lee Chatfield embezzled public and private funds to support a lavish lifestyle of fine dining, ritzy hotels, and trips to exotic locales. That's according to Attorney General Dana Nessel, announcing felony charges against a former GOP leader and his wife, Stephanie. Chatfield, 35, who held a powerful post as the majority party leader in the state capitol throughout 2019 and 2020, is charged in East Lansing District Court with 13 embezzlement, conspiracy, and larceny counts. That's what Dana Nessel said at a news conference. The most serious charge, conducting a criminal enterprise, is a 20-year felony. Only Lee Chatfield is charged with that crime. Chatfield's wife, who allegedly assisted with improperly charging personal family expenses to a nonprofit organization called the Peninsula Fund, also faces one count each of embezzlement and conspiracy. Each charge is a 10-year felony. Though an investigation into financial crimes continues, it's still ongoing, Dana. Nessel said an investigation into allegations of sexual assault against a family member has been closed without charges, but it was that investigation that led to the financial crimes investigation. Quote, we did an extensive investigation and we found that we could not prove a criminal sexual assault charge beyond a reasonable doubt. That's what Nessel said, meaning not that there didn't happen and there wasn't evidence of it. It's that we couldn't prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. She would not give more details, citing the fact that Chatfield is now a criminal defendant facing charges brought by her office. On the financial crimes, Nessel said, Chatfield improperly charged a wide range of personal expenses to public and political funds, including a family vacation to Universal Studios in Orlando, Florida, in which they charged hotels, meals, souvenirs, and the purchase of luxury goods to the fund. Nessel, a Democrat, said Lee Chatfield also used a check kickback scheme in which he wrote checks from funds to an associate or relative and then took cash to spend on personal expenses. So he actually charged directly to the accounts, personal shit, and then devised a great scheme with a paper trail, complete with a paper trail. Like, how many ways do you want to fuck this up? The purpose of the checks was inaccurately reported, such as payment for work done. Now, one of these schemes was used to provide cash spending money for a trip paid for by the Peninsula Fund that Lee, I have to say it like that, that Lee Chatfield and others took to the Bahamas. In 2018, she said, oh, I wonder if Matt Gaetz was there. Chatfield organized the Peninsula Fund in 2017. So it sounds like she set it up just to do this. Another scheme involved the subletting of an apartment that was paid for by the Peninsula Fund to benefit Chatfield personally. Chatfield and his wife used the Peninsula Fund to pay off all $132,000 in charges to Chatfield's personal credit card over a 14-month period. $132,000 credit card bill in 14 months.
Wow.
Chatfield says he and his wife have not been arrested and will be allowed to report, you know, turn themselves in at a future date. In an emailed statement, Chatfield's attorney, Mary Chartier, called the charges politically motivated and said, "We're prepared to fight them each and every step of the way." Okay, good luck. Quote, "While we don't represent Mrs. Chatfield, it appears she's being used as a pawn in a political prosecution, and we're confident that her attorney will effectively fight these charges in court on her behalf." Two of Chatfield's top aides also face charges for allegedly conducting a criminal enterprise while working for Chatfield that included embezzling funds from nonprofits and campaign committees. Nessel brought those charges in December, you'll remember. Donors to nonprofits such as the Peninsula Fund, which are known as social welfare organizations, but which Nessel said are commonly misused as political slush funds, don't have to be publicly disclosed. Nessel said some of the donors' names will be disclosed as the case against Chatfield is prosecuted. She didn't give a direct answer when asked whether any of those donors might face criminal charges. That means yes, probably. About 2 years ago, the Michigan State Police launched an investigation into Chatfield after his brother's wife, Rebecca, told law enforcement in 2021 that he sexually assaulted her for years, starting when she was about 15 years old. She said the assaults began when she was a student at Lee Chatfield, and Lee Chatfield was a teacher at a small private religious school run by his father in northern Michigan. The attorney general's office began assisting state police with that probe, which expanded to investigate allegations of campaign finance violations. Chartier said in previously that Chatfield had had a consensual affair with his sister-in-law, but didn't commit any crimes. Chatfield is also accused of embezzling public funds by overcharging for mileage reimbursements available to state lawmakers for trips between their home districts and the Capitol. Chatfield charged more than 20,000 miles for trips he never took. And in many cases, he was out of the state or out of the country on other trips when he reported to the legislature that he was driving between his home and the district. You know, God, this America's dumbest criminals. Nessel took the opportunity to call for tougher campaign finance and nonprofit laws, saying this is the predictable product of the dark money culture we have here in Lansing.
Thank you so much, AG. This is from Kat Tenbarge at NBC. A federal vehicle safety regulator says it has contacted Tesla after a Cybertruck owner went viral over the weekend with claims that his accelerator pedal got stuck while he was driving the vehicle. On Thursday, Jose Martinez said he was driving his new Tesla Cybertruck on his local drag strip in Southern California when the car started accelerating on its own. He said he put his foot firmly on the brake, stopped the car, and realized that a rubber cover attached to the accelerator had come loose, pinning the pedal down. He said he had the car for just 6 days. Over the weekend, Martinez heard that some Cybertruck deliveries had been paused, he said in a phone interview on NBC News. Now, on Sunday morning, he made a TikTok video showing the issue with his accelerator. As of Monday afternoon, Martinez's video had been viewed almost 2 million times on TikTok and almost 6 million times on X.
I retweeted it.
Well done. As we know, that's the social media website purchased by Tesla owner Elon Musk, the CEO, excuse me. And I quote, "The moment I let go of the brake, I would lurch forward at full throttle again." This is what Martinez said at NBC News. "I had space where I could figure out what was going on. It wasn't a situation where there were cars in front of me or a building or a tree." Various Tesla news sources have reported at least a week-long pause in some Cybertruck deliveries related to an accelerator issue. Cybertruck enthusiasts on an owner's forum have described getting calls alerting them to delays on their deliveries for an unknown amount of time related to an accelerator issue. Yeah, at least one anonymous person previously posted on Cybertruck owner's forum about an issue with their accelerator and brake, saying they crashed into a pole. NBC News could not contact the user or independently verify their story. Other forum members cast doubt on their story and have expressed skepticism about Martinez's TikTok video. During the Cybertruck's launch event in 2019, the car's, quote, "unbreakable glass window shattered."
Did you see that video?
Yes, I did.
Where they throw the brick, like, look at our shatterproof glass. They throw the brick and it's just like crash.
Yeah. Martinez's video and the reported delays came at a tumultuous time for Tesla. Musk announced Monday morning that Tesla would be laying off more than 10% of its global headcount. In an email sent to the company obtained by CNBC and NBC News, Musk himself wrote, "Over the years, we've grown rapidly with multiple factories scaling around the globe. With this rapid growth, there has been duplication of roles and job functions in certain areas. As we prepare the company for our next phase of growth, it's extremely important to look at every aspect of the company for cost reductions and increasing productivity." So apparently he's saying there's a riff in the company and this isn't actually a problem.
This sounds like what DeSantis did with his campaign. "In order to grow, I must fire everyone." That's not how any of this works. I'm just the old lady with the pictures. Okay. All right. Next up, this is from the Associated Press. And this is the story I mentioned, Dana, yesterday. I said we would go into more detail for today. The Supreme Court is allowing Idaho to enforce its ban on gender-affirming care for transgender youth, while lawsuits over this particular law, these lawsuits will proceed. This is reversing the lower courts. So they are actually reversing a court to allow this ban to go into effect. The justice's order Monday allows the state to put in place a 2023 law that subjects physicians to up to 10 years in prison if they provide hormones, puberty blockers, or other gender-affirming care to people under 18. It's unfucking believable. Under the court's order, the two transgender teens who sued to challenge the law still will be able to obtain care. It's just no one else in Idaho will. The court's three liberal justices would have kept the law on hold. Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson wrote that it would have been better to let the case proceed unfettered by our intervention, right? Like I said, they had to do something to make this happen.
Right.
And that's what pisses me off the most. I mean, there's a lot of things, but that's the most. Justice Neil Gorsuch of the conservative majority wrote that it is a welcome development that the court is reining in an overly broad lower court order. Federal judge in Idaho had blocked the law in its entirety after determining that it was necessary to do so to protect the teens who are identified under pseudonyms in court papers. Lawyers for the teens wrote in court papers that the teens' gender dysphoria has been dramatically alleviated as a result of puberty blockers and estrogen therapy. The American Civil Liberties Union, representing the teens and their families, called the Supreme Court's order an awful result for transgender youth and families across the state. Today's ruling allows the state to shut down the care that thousands of families rely on while sowing further confusion and disruption. Idaho Attorney General Raul Labrador said in a statement that the law, quote, ensures children are not subjected to these life-altering drugs and procedures. There's nine things wrong with that sentence. Those suffering from gender dysphoria deserve love, support, and medical care rooted in biological reality. So many problems there. Denying the basic truth that boys and girls are biologically different hurts our kids. No. Denying them the ability to be themselves hurts our kids. Gender-affirming care for youth is supported by every major medical organization, including the AMA and the American Academy of Pediatrics and the American Psychiatric Association. Every fucking single one supports gender-affirming care for youth. Medical professionals define gender dysphoria as psychological distress experienced by those whose gender expression does not match their gender identity. The action comes as the justices also may soon consider whether to take up bans in Kentucky and Tennessee that an appeals court allowed to be enforced in the midst of legal fights. At least 23 states have enacted laws restricting or banning gender-affirming medical care for transgender minors, and most of those states face lawsuits. A federal judge struck down an Arkansas ban as unconstitutional. Montana's ban is also temporarily on hold. The states that have enacted laws restricting or banning gender-affirming medical care for transgender minors are Alabama, Arkansas, Arizona, Florida, Georgia, Idaho, Indiana, Iowa, Kentucky, Louisiana, Mississippi, Missouri, Montana, Nebraska, North Carolina, North Dakota, Ohio, Oklahoma, South Dakota, Tennessee, Texas, Utah, and West Virginia.
Thank you so much, AG. And from the Associated Press, a federal appeals court has overturned a West Virginian transgender sports ban, finding that the law violates Title IX. This is from the federal civil rights law that prohibits sex-based discrimination in schools. The ruling Tuesday from the 4th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, it blocks a West Virginia law banning transgender girls from playing on girls' sports teams. The court said the law cannot lawfully be applied to a 13-year-old girl who has been taking puberty-blocking medication and publicly identified as a girl since she was in the third grade. In February of 2023, the court has blocked the state's bid to kick Becky Pepper Jackson off her middle school track and field team if the law were enforced. Now, Judge Toby Haytens wrote that offering her, quote, a choice between not participating in sports and participating only on a boys team is not a real choice at all.
Well put.
The defendants cannot expect the BPJ will countermand her social transition, her medical treatment, and all the work she has done with her schools, teachers, and coaches for nearly half of her life by introducing herself to teammates, coaches, and even opponents as a boy. This is what Haytens wrote. The court Tuesday ruled in favor of the American Civil Liberties Union, its West Virginia chapter, and LGBTQ interest group Lambda Legal, which filed a lawsuit in 2021 against the state and county boards of education and their superintendents as defendants. Republican Governor Jim Justice has signed a bill into law earlier that year. Quote, this is a tremendous victory for our client, transgender West Virginians, and the freedom of all youth to play as who they are. This is from ACLU West Virginia attorney Joshua Block in a statement. In finding that law violates Title IX when applied to the girl, the court noted that she has been publicly living as a girl for more than 5 years and changed her name, and the state of West Virginia has issued her a birth certificate listing her as female. The court said she takes puberty blocking medication and also takes estrogen hormone therapy. Starting on elementary school, she has participated only on girls' athletic teams. Sports participation is one of the main fronts in legislative and legal battles in recent years over the role of transgender people in U.S. public life. Most Republican-controlled states have passed restrictions on participation, as well as bans on gender-affirming care for minors. Several have also restricted which bathrooms and locker rooms transgender people can use, particularly in schools. The Biden administration originally planned to release a new federal Title IX rule. The law forbids discrimination based on sex in education. And he wanted to address both campus of sexual assault and transgender athletes. Earlier this year, the department decided to split them into separate rules, and the athletics rule now remains in limbo. And I do want to say this. I met Becky Pepper Jackson. I hosted an event for Lambda Legal last year. She is one of the funniest, smartest, most amazing kids I've met. And this is the funniest part. Becky will tell you she's a shitty track runner. She's not great. She doesn't win her races. This isn't about her taking spots from other people. She truly just wants to race and participate in girls' sports, which is where she belongs. I can speak on this one particularly only because I know the case. And she won an award last year at the Liberty Awards for Lambda Legal in New York. And she's just brilliant and funny and a bad track athlete, but really, really wants to be with her peers. It's just unfortunate that people also, you know, whenever they see this or there's stories, it's always about, oh, there's a swimmer that won first place and took a spot of, you know, cis swimmers. And I do understand there's conversation to be had around this, but this particular case has nothing to do with that.
Yeah. And I guess, but anytime I talk to somebody who wants to talk about that, I'm like, were you in that race?
I know.
Did she beat
you? That's why I'm saying there's conversation to be had, but there's also facts that exist in certain things, competitive sports, the NCAA, you know, there's medical restrictions that have to be in place, testosterone.
There's rules. You
know, transition. There are rules that are put on by a global committee. So I'm glad that this one is happening and sort of kicks us into the good news after our breaks.
That's so cool that you know her. Yeah. And we're not going to go directly into the good news. I'm going to rant on about this bond filing for a while before we get to the good news. But if you have good news, send it to us, dailybeanspod.com. Click on contact. You can fast forward to the good news, or if you want to stick around and listen to me talk about excess line insurers in New York City. I think I've stumbled upon some really fucking significant news, though. So, you know, stick around. We'll be right back.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
Hello, foodies. Are you tired of wading through countless meal kit options? They all seem to blur together. Well, let me introduce you to Home Chef. They stand head and shoulders above everyone. Truly understand your culinary needs, mine especially. Leave behind the disappointment of average meals and choose the option that promises to delight your palate. Home Chef is here to transform your mealtime with delicious, expertly designed meals that are just a click away. Home Chef has over 30 options a week and serves a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. For a limited time, Home Chef is offering you 18 free meals, plus free dessert for life, and of course, free shipping on your first box. Just go to homechef.com/dailybeans. Home Chef simplifies your kitchen routine by delivering chef-designed recipes and fresh ingredients directly to your door. With a selection ranging from classic meal kits with easy-to-follow instructions to quick microwave meals that are table-ready in minutes, which I love, Home Chef ensures that delicious dining is always easy and hassle-free. And it's not just convenient, it's also good for your wallet, helping families save an average of $86 a month on groceries. That's huge. I was in a hurry yesterday for dinner, so I had another one of Home Chef's convenient express meals, the one-pot savory tofu and edamame soup with spinach, mushrooms, and green onions. It was so delicious, quick and easy, comfort food because it was cold and blustery outside, packed with flavor. The combination of extra firm tofu with earthy, cremini mushrooms and bright, yummy edamame, all swimming in a miso-infused broth with a hint of ginger, it created a mouthwatering umami experience. And now I have another favorite meal from Home Chef. So for a limited time, Home Chef is offering the Daily Beans listeners 18 free meals, plus free shipping on your first box and free dessert for life at homechef.com/dailybeans. That's homechef.com/dailybeans for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. Must be an active subscriber to receive free dessert.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Frame. Mother's Day is almost here. What are you getting her? Something that shows you care. Something that makes her feel loved. Something that won't stress you out. Something like the Skylight Frame. The Skylight Frame is the perfect gift. It's a touchscreen photo frame your whole family can upload photos to, from wherever they are in the world. It's a way to share with her all the moments that matter. It sets up in seconds. You can even make sure that it's already loaded with photos when your mom opens her Mother's Day gift. And her Skylight Frame can hold thousands of the treasured photos you share. It's an easy, heartfelt way for mom to stay connected with those who matter most. It really is the perfect gift. Now, as a special Mother's Day offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight Frame when you go to skylightframe.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTFRAME.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightframe.com/easy.
Hey, everybody, it's AG. Welcome back. All right, so we're going to go through this filing and we're going to learn a lot about insurance. So this is with regard to this relates to the fact that the subprime car loan guy named Mr. Hankey, the Christmas poo. This is the guy, Maddo talked about him on her show, said would pretend to be a flower delivery person or a pizza delivery person and call up active duty service members, military members, and trick them into telling him where they were and then come illegally repossess the car that he gave them pursuant to a loan with exorbitant interest rates, almost unpayable interest rates. Just a very, very shitty, shady, predatory fuckface guy. All right. Now, so this is Hankey. His company in Delaware is called Knight Specialty Insurance Company. And as you know, they posted bond for Donald Trump. They approached Donald Trump, and Donald Trump and Hankey, Trump and Hankey, did not go to the court and say, hey, I know you're thinking about lowering the bond, but we can do it. We have the bond now. No, what they did was they sat there and waited until they got a decision from the appellate court in New York, which actually lowered Donald Trump's bond. He actually got a favorable ruling there for a change, lowered it from $464 million to $175 million. Now, it should have been incumbent upon Hankey and Trump to go to the court when they were negotiating a bond to say, you know what, about the lowering the bond thing, you don't need to do that anymore. Or we still need it lowered, but we're in negotiations, just to notify the court that somebody is playing ball and wants to back your bond. So they filed all their bond paperwork, but they left a bunch of stuff off. And that set off alarm bells with the New York Attorney General. She went, hey, So it looks like you didn't attach your financial statements, Mr. Hanke. And so we're going to reject this bond. I'm going to object to this bond. And then the court actually rejected the bond and said, you need to refile this. And at first I thought, they just made an administrative mistake. No, it wasn't an administrative mistake. And now I know why they left their financial statements off of that bond paperwork that they had to file with the court. So they refiled with their financial statements. And then when Tish James saw how much money they had on hand, she raised alarm bells again and objected to the bond and filed an objection motion to the bond because the company, Knight Specialty Insurance Group, or KSIC, doesn't have enough cash on hand to back the bond and didn't explain how they were going to back the bond. They just said, we're going to do it, and here's our financial sheet, and it doesn't have enough money in their coffers. So they set a hearing. The court said, we got to discuss this shit, and they set a hearing for April 22nd, which I'm very much looking forward to. And then, you know, pursuant to this hearing, because they have this hearing on April 22nd, sorry if I'm using words that don't make sense. I've been steeped for a few hours in the exciting world of New York excess line insurance law. So they said, brief the court, tell us why we should accept your bond. And so he turned in his paperwork at like with an hour to spare last night. And I read it. And when I first read it, I gave it a cursory glance. It just sounded like circular bullshit logic to me. And I didn't know what many of the words meant, but it doesn't matter. You know how you can just sometimes substitute words in, like, well, if you have a ball and you want to pay for a car, but you're getting the money from Jennifer and Jennifer can't afford the ball. Like, you know, just trying to put this all together in my head because it was just such, it's just built on a house of cards and like shitty cards, right? Like cards made of really low grade card stock. So let's go through this filing. And I want to talk a little bit. I'll interrupt here and there with some stuff that I figured out. It says Trump et al. Trump, together with KSIC, that's the Knight Specialty Insurance Company, respectfully submit this memorandum in support of their joint application to A, justify KSIC as surety on the undertaking upon the ground that said surety is duly qualified to act as such, meaning we are qualified to act as a surety on your bond. B, set aside the notice of exception to surety filed by the Attorney General of the State of New York, because the New York Attorney General came in and said, this is an exception. They want to set that aside. And C, award our costs incurred by us by this application. Pay our costs. Now, KSIC, they say, is a respected, well-capitalized Delaware-domiciled insurer. So keep that in mind. KSIC is in Delaware, that has long underwritten surety bonds and other types of insurance placed around the country. KSIC is an eligible excess lines insurer in the state of New York, consistent with applicable law, and is authorized to underwrite surety bonds on an excess line basis. So I looked up what an excess line insurer is, and that's somebody who insures weird, crazy risk, high risk stuff. Stuff you don't like, not cars, not houses, but like oil rigs and, kid fraud rapists surety bonds, for example, or, what's that? Sotheby's of New York. They're probably an excess line insurer because they insure weird, out of the ordinary stuff, excess line insurance. Okay. They go on to say the $175 million bond is collateralized by a $175.3 million in cash held in a Charles Schwab account pledged to KSIC. And KSIC has the right to exercise control over that account. So what they're saying here is this bond is backed by a Trump Schwab account worth pretty much exactly $175 million in cash and a Schwab account. And Trump has given us the ability to exercise control over that Schwab account after 2 days' time. So we have 2 days. We can go in and pillage it. Okay. I'm not sure why you would need an insurance company to secure a bond for you, especially if there's a fee that you have to pay when you have $175 million in cash. And does he have more than one Schwab account? Because the Chubb Group, which secured the bond for the E. Jean Carroll, $91.63 million, was a Schwab account guaranteed by the Chubb Group, which is, you know, a big, huge, legit insurer that can do business in New York. So does he have a different Schwab account? Does it have more? Did he have a Schwab account for $275 million, and he used $91 million of it and now has exactly $175 million left? Like, we don't know, because the paperwork for the Schwab account just says it has $175 million in it. There's no actual accounting. So that's a red flag. It goes on to say KSIC also independently maintains more than $539 million in assets. So the fuck what? We don't care about your assets. And $138 million in equity. That's supposed to be cash, but they say equity. So it might not even be cash. And so $138 million doesn't cover the $175 million bond. And we have access to more than $2 billion in assets and $1 billion in equity, of which nearly $1 billion in cash and marketable securities pursuant to a reinsurance agreement with our parent company, Knight Insurance Company. So they're trying to say now that they don't have the cash to back the bond, but their parent company is backing their backing of the bond, because a reinsurance agreement is when an insurer insures an insurer. Okay. So now we have KSIC in Delaware, and we have KIC, the Knight Insurance Company. That's the parent company that has apparently $1 billion in cash and marketable securities, whatever that means. And the reason the parent company can't insure the bond itself is because they're not authorized to in New York. Though, really, neither is Knight Specialty Insurance Company, because it doesn't have a certificate to insure things in New York either. But it does have a letter, it says, to operate as an excess line insurer in New York, according to them. The Excess Line Associations of New York, ELANY, which acts as a service provider to the New York Department of Financial Services, is monitoring and supervising the excess lines market, and it has deemed that KSIC sufficiently collateralized to make excess line placements in New York. So they're saying that this nonprofit organization called ELANY, ELANY, we'll call it, and they are a nonprofit group that does the work for you to make sure that you can, you know, practice in the excess lines insurance market in New York. And KSIC says that they have, Eleni has deemed KSIC sufficiently collateralized to do that. And to be collateralized, you have to have like $47 million or $48 million in insured collateral. New York, as the nation's commercial center, has long welcomed excess lines carriers. Here, KSIC's solvency and substantial financial credibility, as bolstered by a cash collateral in the full amount of the bond, that's Trump's cash collateral. So the insurer is saying, we're going to back this bond with the guy we're trying to insure's money and our parent company who can't sell insurance in New York, because they've reinsured us to insure the guy who's insuring us also. Everybody seems to be insuring KSIC. KSIC seems to be insuring fucking nothing. So I looked up the Eleni requirements. That's the Excess Lines Association of New York, this nonprofit. I looked up their requirements to be an excess line broker in New York. It says excess line insurers must meet eligibility standards in order to underwrite risks presented by excess line brokers. These insurers are not licensed by the state because of an exception to the insurer licensing requirements. Insurers should be aware that the exception applies to transactions placed by New York licensed excess line brokers, but does not extend to business conducted directly in New York by the insurer or through parties not licensed as excess line brokers. New York has adopted by regulation the eligibility requirements set forth in the NRRA for foreign and alien insurers, respectively. Foreign insurers must maintain a minimum of $47 million of policyholder surplus and be licensed in their state of domicile where they operate. In this case, it would be Delaware, for the lines of business they plan to write an excess line risk in New York. Alien insurers must be published on the NAIC, International Insurer Department's most recent quarterly listing to be eligible. So we've got foreign insurers that do line this excess line stuff, and we have alien insurers that do excess line stuff. Foreign excess lines insurance companies mean they operate outside of New York, but in the United States. Alien excess line insurers operate outside of the United States, but they insure stuff in New York. So I went to the Eleni website and I looked at all of their lists. They have full lists of New York excess line insurers. They have a list of foreign excess line insurers in New York. Again, that means the insurer is in a different state, which KSIC is. They're in Delaware. I looked at the alien list, which is out of the country. And I even looked at their companies no longer listed in New York list. And nowhere did I find Knight Specialty Insurance Company or Knight Insurance Company listed. Nowhere at all on the Eleni website. Their name's not there. Anyhow, back to the filing. They say here, argument one, Knight Specialty Insurance Company, that's KSIC, qualifies as a surety as an eligible excess lines insurer in the state of New York. Now, the New York Attorney General is arguing this. They're saying, no, there's no exception for excess line insurers. And I got to say, even if there was, I don't think they are a certified excess line insurer. I went to the website for Eleni and they're not on there at all. I feel like they're making this shit up. Now, again, I am no expert, but I know how to look at a list and I understand the alphabet and they're not on there anywhere. They say the purpose of an undertaking is to provide an assurance to the judgment creditor that this judgment, or as in this case, a lesser amount decreed by the court, will be collectible if the judgment is affirmed on appeal. The surety and its bond in this case fulfill both the purpose and the legal requirements of an undertaking. But they don't, because you don't have $175 million in cash. You're relying on cash by the person you're supposed to be guaranteeing. And then also saying that our parent company, who's not an excess line insurer in New York, but we are, but they're insuring us to insure Trump, but Trump's also insuring us. It's like everything falls in on itself. It is like a black hole. It's like the red matter in the J.J. Abrams Star Trek. Everything is falling in on the singularity of KSIC, which doesn't have the money or the certificates to insure anyone. Everyone else is backing them up. Trump, their parent company, Eleni, but they're not even on their website. It's bonkers. And they go on and they make these arguments. And, you know, I'll tell you what, they also say that KSIC is adequately capitalized and reinsured through its parent company. That's point number two. Hey, Trump's got us. Our parent company has us, but we're the only ones. Actually, we don't have a certificate to sell insurance in New York, but we do have excess line insurance status. No, but I can't find that they have that either. So what I think happened is that they made it up that they have excess line insurance ability to sell insurance in New York so that they can be the ones to insure Donald Trump. And they're saying that it's okay that they don't have enough money to do it because Trump has a $175 million Schwab account, even though we don't have the accounting for that. It just says $175,000 might as well be written in Sharpie, or $175 million, excuse me. And our parent company. It's the most bizarre thing I've ever tried to piece together as far as a legal filing goes. And the other thing is, and this blew my mind, and Southpaw on Twitter caught this, the signature page is for the Chubb Group loan. It was dated on like March 29th. And it says it's got the Chubb Group parent company in the bottom thing. So maybe they were using the Chubb Group filing as a template and forgot to put the right signature page on it. Or maybe nobody would sign their name to it. I don't know. But that's also, I think that might be an administrative error. I hope. But given everything else they're lying about, who knows? So I'm very much looking forward to this hearing on April 22nd. All right, everybody, that I just wanted to go over that with you. It's just bizarre to me. But we need to take one more quick break and we'll be right back with the good news.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Frame. Mother's Day is almost here. What are you getting her? Something that shows you care. Something that makes her feel loved. Something that won't stress you out. Something like the Skylight Frame. The Skylight Frame is the perfect gift. It's a touchscreen photo frame your whole family can upload photos to, from wherever they are in the world. It's a way to share with her all the moments that matter. It sets up in seconds. You can even make sure that it's already loaded with photos when your mom opens her Mother's Day gift. And her Skylight Frame can hold thousands of the treasured photos you share. It's an easy, heartfelt way for mom to stay connected with those who matter most. It really is the perfect gift. Now, as a special Mother's Day offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight Frame when you go to skylightframe.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTFRAME.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightframe.com/easy.
Everybody, welcome back. It's time for the good news.
Who likes good news?
Good news, good news.
And if you have any good news, confessions, corrections, you want to play What the Fark is in your arc, send us a photo or a drawing of an animal and we'll try to guess what it is or what breed it is. Whatever you want us to guess, we'll guess. We'll guess the name. We'll name your new shelter pet. And if you have an adoptable pet in your area, you can send that to us too if you don't have pod pet tax to pay, because we can maybe find a forever home for that baby.
Or also, send us babies and we'll try and guess the name. And maybe we're better at that.
Yeah, we'll just give your babies a name. Send us your baby picture and we'll try to guess your name, whatever it is. Send us that. If you have student debt relief stories, great VA healthcare stories, or Affordable Care Act stories, love to hear those. Shout out to a loved one, shout out to a small business in your area, send those in. And of course, we love whoopee stories, blankie stories, stuffed animal stories. Those are so adorable. You can send it all to us at dailybeanspod.com and click on contact. Dana, you're going to kick us off today.
Yes, I am, because this one is for me. And I'm actually really grateful for this correction, because sometimes I get blinded by my disdain for Republicans that I can't think outside of that box. And Corey pronounced he and him is helping me. He said, love the song at the end of the episode today. Maybe a correction or just food for thought. Dana seems to think, I don't know if I love that wording, but Dana seems to think that someone expelled from Congress should not be allowed to run again. And in theory, I would agree, except we have the Tennessee Three to show why they shouldn't be barred forever and it should be left up to the voters. Mm. I know they aren't truly the same, but I don't trust the GOP to not weaponize this if they ever get the chance, which is why I'm okay with Santos running again. Here's a picture of my dog Goldie asking for bite of whatever I was holding. She's very, very picky when it comes to food. And there's just a little producer note here. The difference between state and U.S. reps, this is notwithstanding. Jones and Pearson, of the three, they didn't get reelected. They were reinstated. Jones by the Nashville Metro Council and Pearson by Shelby County Commissioners.
But they did run again after that.
Correct. Yes, right? They ran again after that. And you know what, Corey? You're absolutely right. I guess in my head, my thought process was also, if you're expelled by your own party, you shouldn't. But also, I don't want to hold to that either, because they got rid of, well, they voted her out, but I think they would have tried to get rid of, what the hell is her name? That is usually the devil, you know, but we love her because of the January 6th.
Liz Cheney.
Liz Cheney. Thank you. Like, I can see them trying to oust Liz Cheney, and I would have thought that was unfair. But under my ridiculous rule, she wouldn't have been able to run again. So I agree with you, Corey, 100%. And thank you for bringing this correction to my to my attention.
Yeah, it's so important to put the shoe on the other foot, you know?
Yeah,
thank you for that. Absolutely. It didn't even occur to me. Like, I usually try to do my best to put the shoe on the other foot, and I.
Me too. I think I'm just so fucking over all these people.
It's just George Santos.
Yeah,
but no, it makes total sense. Next up from Susan, pronouns she and her. So far, I've written 500 get out the vote letters to mail in October through voteforward.org. I'm planning to write many more before the election. Through Vote Forward, you can adopt as few as 5 voters, or adopt them in batches of 20 or 100, then just print out the letters, add a note, address the envelope, stamp it, and put it aside until it's time to mail. Letters are targeted to swing states and contested congressional races. You can vote and, quote, take someone with you from across the country. I hope listeners will join me in writing letters. Little voter pen pal stuff. I love it.
Awesome. Awesome, awesome. Many postcards. Okay, this is from Anonymous. No pronouns given. Over the last year, I've been trying to find ways that I can volunteer my time and for doing something that I find rewarding and wanting to make a difference. The Beans and a few other podcasts have helped me in transitioning from what feels like sitting on the sidelines and cheering my team on to being involved with the team, learning, and trying to make a few calls. After spending a lot of time trying to find something to invest myself into, I have found the Democratic Socialists of America, or the DSA. I enjoy going to the weekly chapter meetings for my area and learning new things about the community I live in. I've only been a member for just over a month, but I have participated in my first Free Palestine protest over this weekend, and it felt like I was doing something more meaningful. I look forward to trying to make my community better by getting affordable housing to people so we do not have to have any more homelessness in our town, with the hopes that it could spread across the rest of the USA. Thank you guys very much, and I always look forward to listening to the Beans when driving to and from work.
Oh, thanks, Anonymous, for that note. That's very, very cool that you listen to a couple, like, I don't know, I can't speak for Dana, but I was going to say like a couple of old Biden voters in the Democratic Socialists of America. That's fucking cool. But I will say this, I am actually more to the left of Medicare for all, Dana. I want direct government health care. Like, I don't want to have to go through private parties.
Right.
I don't want to have to go through private administrative third parties to make payments. I love direct government care. That's just me. Anyway, that's super socialist. So welcome and thanks for listening. Rowan is next. No pronouns. Dear Allison and Dana, thank you so much for your wonderful podcast, which I listen to every day here in England. I just wanted to give a shout out to the lovely people who organize Singing with the Nightingales, and especially Sam Lee, who invites musicians from all over the world to come to a wood in Sussex to play duets with nightingales whilst their guests sit and listen in the darkness. In total raptures.
Wow.
Keep up the good work. And there will be a link to Singing with the Nightingales in the show notes. That's fucking cool.
Yes, it is. Thank you, AG. This is from Sandy, pronouns she and her. I love what you are doing. You have become my morning's go-to source for the important things I need to know. I've heard you say that every Republican accusation is a confession. Well, a couple days ago, I read that Trump wanted Biden drug tested. I immediately thought, I wonder what Trump's taken. So, cut to yesterday's Don Snorleon episode. I wonder if he was sedated so he wouldn't act out. Because it seems like an odd time for a nap. Just saying, Trump drinks. Trump drinks. For Pod Pet Tax, I'm attaching pictures of my bestie, Buck. Oh, and Buck is really fucking cute.
I love the hat. That's a little Carter Page hat right there. Is what we're
so
talking about.
So cute.
So much hair. Look, they've brushed the dog and then spelled out messages with it.
Oh, that is crazy. So much hair. Oh my God. AG, the next one is tiny, so I'll take this as a long one after. This is from Christy, no pronouns given. Springtime in Ohio, aka frog orgy time. What?
These are the toads I used to collect when I was a kid.
They're cute.
I have so many of them. All right, let's see. Next up from Katie, pronouns she and her. Hello, ladies. Thanks for the most amazing podcast that I religiously listen to. I feel like it helps me keep my optimism in the midst of what feels like a made-up crazy narrative, right? I have some good news. I'm the principal of a small Title I school, and I have the pure privilege of being part of an amazing community. Our students are the best, and our staff is top-notch. We recently were awarded a national award for excellence. What I'm coming to celebrate is that we have always struggled with fundraising at our school, We have supportive families, but it's always been difficult to support the school monetarily. This year, we decided to do a jogathon for the first time, rather than selling goods. We decided to make a lofty goal of $5,000, knowing our last fundraiser brought in about $1,500. We ran our jogathon and then celebrated because our community supported us big time. We raised almost $16,000 in 2 weeks. I told the kids that what this means is we can dream. I couldn't believe how much our community turned out. I've always been very proud of our community, and I don't know why it surprised me, but man, we were over the moon. It's a good news, and it's amazing, and we kicked off our testing season with an assembly and our jogathon instead of my beautiful Ruth Butter Gilmore, my miniature golden doodle. No. Here's my daughter and me from our Mission Possible assembly. I love it, Mission Possible. Thank you so much for all you do to fight for democracy. Look, oh
cute.
Oh, adorable. All right, I'm going to take this next one because it's kind of relatively short.
And I'm just going to stare at the baby picture at the end, so go for it.
That's kind of why I wanted to take it, so you could just sort of look at the baby while I read it. From CJ, pronouns he and him. A few days ago, my family was sitting down for dinner and generally complaining about how much groceries keep getting more expensive, specifically the avocados we have almost daily. Cue my son, the Gen Xer, in a Gen Alpha body screaming or chiming in, "I wish avocados were only 1 cent." Everyone at the table went quiet. Why is that? Because I like them. A moment's pause. And they're food, and everyone needs food. So I think it should all cost 1 cent. I can't tell you how much my socialist heart filled with pride, but it's not the first time he's shown his egalitarian side, previously stating the same ideology regarding houses, medicine, and other human rights, but he thinks guns should cost $1 trillion because they only hurt people. Whenever you ask an 8-year-old what they want to do as adults, you always get a laundry list too big to type, but he always has a common theme: to help others. I couldn't be prouder and more excited to see what he becomes. And here's a picture of him the first time getting to swim when he was about 6 months old.
Oh.
And again, I was a little confused because it said the Gen Xer and the Gen Alpha. But I was like, this is a Gen Xer talking about wanting avocados to cost a penny? Maybe you should, I don't know, talk to him about that. No, it's a Gen Alpha. It's a Gen Xer in a Gen Alpha body. And now I get it. They're 8 years old. Look at them, baby.
So sweet.
Mm.
All right. This last one I am reading for a reason. So I just want the listeners to know that. And then we are going to have a discussion. This is from Anonymous, pronoun she. She says, "I'm a big fan of all your podcasts and I listen regularly. I like to listen to the Daily Beans for news each day. I'm starting to feel as though I'm being indoctrinated about LGBTQ issues, and it's beginning to turn me off to the podcast. Perhaps Dana needs to have her own podcast where she can discuss these issues that are important to her with like-minded individuals. I'm not a bigot in any way. I just want to hear the news." So, Allison and I talked about it, and we discussed how maybe to approach this. And I will say vulnerably, I had a very strong visceral reaction to this submission at first. I want whoever the listener is, Anonymous, to know a few things about the podcast. First of all, I don't choose the stories. That's the first thing. Allison does. And along with other people that help her, our team chooses this. A lot of the stories that we have been talking about, I know for a fact, are about our trans community. And I am not part of the trans community, but I think if you are only fighting for communities that you are a part of, you are doing it wrong. That's the first thing I'll say. And so to have a sentence say, perhaps Dana needs to have her own podcast where she can discuss these issues that are so important to her. Anonymous, I want you to know how many emails I get from people that are part of the LGBTQ community and that have trans children that have thanked us for covering these stories. And I need you to know that even if I was not the co-host of this podcast, Allison would be covering these issues. This is more than just LGBTQ issues. This is humanity, and it is a marginalized group of people that is being intentionally targeted by our government, by our administrators, and now by the Supreme Court of the United States of America. And it's not a real threat. I don't want to make assumptions about this listener. I have some ideas and thoughts. I just hope that you will know and maybe consider hearing those words. When I read them, it sounds like the same thing to me of asking if I can use a separate water fountain. If you want me to discuss topics with like-minded people, that's what we're doing. The majority of listeners of this podcast are the like-minded people. And I will say, I looked over a lot of the scripts. When we have a story, today is an exception, but when we have our scripts, once maybe a week in the past, it's been a LGBTQ quote unquote story. The rest of it's just the news. It's just the news. And so, Anonymous, I do hope that hearing these things back to you might maybe make you rethink, one, how that would sound to someone like me, even though I am not a transgender individual. And using the word indoctrinated, it sounds very Fox Newsy. It sounds very libs of TikTok. It is a very powerful word. And I would like to think that you are an intelligent, free-minded human being. And if you hear something that you may not agree with, you are able to decipher that, process it, and not internalize it as true for yourself. So, Allison, if you would like to make any more comments, I would love to hear what you have to say. But we included this for a reason. I know this is not the majority of our listeners, but I do hope that whoever this person is doesn't let go of the podcast. Just maybe thinks about this a little differently moving forward, because these stories are not about me and they are not issues that are just important to me. And the listeners are like-minded people. We care about other humans. That's why we are progressives and liberals and woke, because we give a shit. So I'm going to stop talking before the visceral response takes back over and just take a breath. But Allison, thank you for letting me have some time with that submission, and thank you for letting us include it.
Yeah, thank you, Dana. You know, I started this podcast network because I was tired of profit-driven news, whitewashed news. I think it's important that we curate the news, that we think about it from our individual perspectives and deliver it from our individual lived experiences. I spoke recently at Loyola Law School, and they said, if you had any, you know, I'm not a lawyer, but they said, if you have any advice, what would it be? And I would say, I know that they say the law is reason free from passion, but don't leave yourself at the door. Bring yourself and your lived experiences with you into your practice of the law, because I do it in my practice of reading the news. Mm-hmm. Dana, we're a pro-democracy podcast. And when people's rights are being stripped away by an extreme Supreme Court, whether it's people of color, LGBTQ+, whatever vulnerable women, whatever vulnerable community it is, people who can get pregnant, people with uteruses, uteri, I don't know. when our rights are being taken away from us, that's news to me, because we need to defend our democracy with every ounce of our being. And I'm writing a book right now about the media, how we need to add citizens' voices to it, how we need to democratize it, how it needs to be media for the people, by the people, not for the people by five white rich guys who are only concerned about the bottom line. And how, when we curate the news and we democratize the new media landscape with diverse voices, they're made relatable by our lived experiences. And I think that that's truly the most important thing. It is the number one thing in my mission statement for this network. Money is like 10 on the list. And I just wanted to let you know, Anonymous, that that is why we have these pro-democracy stories and why I pick and choose the news stories that I do. So that's all I want to say. I do hope you continue to listen. I hope that hearing your words read back to you maybe has an impact. And I will say, Dana, it was very hard for us not to get very angry very quickly. So thank you for talking that out with me, my friend.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
All right. Do you have any? That was the final thought, really, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, final thought, I can switch it around and just love each other. I mean, really, learn about something that you don't know about. Teach yourself something new. And
like excess line insurance.
So apparently, yeah. Now we all know about excess line insurance thanks to the B block.
I can't believe I fucking spent 2 hours on a goddamn excess line insurance website. All right. I love you, my friend. I love all of you as well. And we'll be back in your ears tomorrow. Until then, please take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Take care of the planet. Take care of your mental health and take care of your family, your whole family. Vote blue over Q.
And please take everyone you know with you.
I've been AG.
And I've been DG.
And them's the Beans. The Daily Beans is written and executive produced by Allison Gill, with additional research and reporting by Dana Goldberg. Sound design and editing is by Desiree McFarlane, with art and web design by Joelle Reeder with Moxie Design Studios. Music for The Daily Beans is written and performed by They Might Be Giants, and the show is a proud member of the MSW Media Network, a collection of creator-owned podcasts dedicated to news, politics, and justice. For more information, please visit mswmedia.com.
MSW Media.
Hi, I'm Frances Callier.
And I'm Angela V. Shelton.
And we're Frangela.
You know what you need in your life? The Final Word podcast.
Yes, you do.
That's right. It is the final word on all things political and pop cultural.
Where we make real news real funny.
Where we inspire you so you can hashtag resist.
Subscribe and get a new episode of the Final Word podcast each week. It's the news we think you need to hear.
That's right. We think you need to hear it. Okay.
Yeah, it's what we say so.
That's right. And because all we do is give, every Thursday you can listen to our hysterical podcast, Idiot of the Week.
We round up the stupid because you know what? Somebody has to.
Okay. All we do is give.
Hi, this is John Cryer, and I am hosting a new 7-part true crime podcast called Lawyers, Guns, and Money. That'll challenge everything you think you know about U.S. covert operations and presidential misconduct. From Jack Bryan, the director of American PSYOP, comes the incredible true story of John Mattis, a newly sworn-in Miami public defender in the 1980s who has found himself completely in over his head.
I step off the plane, and there is a van with a couple guys with Uzis. And one of them in broken English said, "Welcome to Bogota, John."
Mattis's first felony defendant has been arrested for having a machine gun and tells Mattis a dangerous secret.
He was shipping arms into Central America on behalf of the CIA. As a first-time lawyer, I want to act like I know what I'm doing.
But with the help of a Colombian drug smuggler...
How much money the CIA raised by hitting up drug dealers?
A lot of money, millions of dollars.
An Alabama mercenary...
They were prepared to die to the last man. I saw this in them. I saw the fire in their eyes. And they made me their war chief.
And a newly elected senator, John Kerry.
We are looking at allegations of drug running, gun smuggling, conspiracy to commit murder and murder itself.
He'll fight to free his client.
The judge said, "Show me in a courtroom how we were at war."
Expose an illegal war being run by the White House.
I mean, I wanted him involved, but I didn't want to be on record as doing it.
And somehow stay alive in the process.
I just escaped a kidnapping by the CIA in Costa Rica.
This is Lawyers, Guns, and Money.
So you have a man in an Armani suit standing on the bow of a boat with a rocket launcher and says, "If I lose sight of you, I will launch. You will be vaporized."
Available everywhere starting October 29th, or get it ad-free and early starting October 22nd at lawyersgunsandmoney.supercast.com. There you'll find bonus episodes along with exclusive content. Subscribe now.